get through all of these,
Little side notes.
Little side notes that we had, and I think that we left off.
At Reno, we did everything back, everything up to 1969, so we stopped when I came to Reno in the summer of 69 to work at Washoe Medical Center.
Okay, and today is,
26th.
January 26th. This is Eileen Barker, we're interviewing Dr. Scully in his home. And, we're going to start now with, your, move to Reno.
Right. Well, I couldn't come up with, many, stories about that, although I do remember the day we arrived. As I told you earlier, and I won't repeat it, I got hired by Ernie Mack and Carol Ogren in the spring of 69 when it was clear that the legislature was going to pass the medical school. And I came out, I guess, twice, finally was hired, and Celia and I picked up. We lived in Summit, New Jersey. I had been working at the in Newark at St. Michael's Medical Center. So anyway, we picked up and moved the kids out sometime in August to take this job as Director of Medical Education. And I had several other jobs. My salary was split with Washoe, and then I got some money from the regional medical program, and then later some money from the medical school. So I really had several jobs that I was juggling, mostly though initially as Director of Medical Education. But anyway, we arrived on a plane, had to wait 3 or 4 days for our car and our furniture to show up, and I had previously, on a previous visit, agreed to rent the house we're sitting in right now. I rented it from Bob Miles. He had owned it, and he had rented it to a psychiatrist in town, and then it was sitting empty for a while. Bob and Jean had built their new home around the corner on, right around on Regent Circle. At any rate, we had the house, but there was nothing in it, and we had to wait. So we went to the Holiday Inn, the old Holiday Inn, which is down on South Virginia, across from what is now Meadowood. And, of course, it's a populated area now, but and then that was way out in the middle of nowhere. South Virginia was the only way out of town south. And we got two rooms adjoining in the Holiday Inn, and of course the kids were happy in August to be able to go swimming. But Celia, I think she cried herself to sleep the first couple of nights in the Holiday Inn. Not so much because we had five kids living in the place, but she said that I had brought her to a small hayseed town in the desert, and did we do the right thing? At least Las Vegas, when we lived there a few years earlier, was a fairly booming metropolis, but Reno was pretty small at the time. And she had the smallest town, I guess, we ever had lived in was probably it was Las Vegas, because I think El Paso and San Antonio were pretty big cities. And we lived in Philadelphia and New York, so she cried and was... But anyway, the neighborhood was absolutely wonderful. After our furniture arrived, after a few days, we moved in, and we met our neighbors, the Savages and the McAuliffes and the Melchers, and the Hugs were across the street, and at that time, Cliff Young and his family lived down the street, and the Miles were wonderful to us. So it was very, very nice, and shortly after we arrived, I think the Miles had a neighborhood party, and the first time I ever got caught in this trick, we went over to the party, and what they did is they put everyone's name on the back of them, or written out in the back, and before they would give me a drink or Celia, we had to go around and memorize all of the people's names in the neighborhood and address them that way. You know, Joe, Bob, whatever, Jim, Proctor, Huggett, etc. Finally, you know, so it was a very effective way to force us to learn the names of everybody in the neighborhood in probably about 10 minutes or 15. I've forgotten exactly when.
Or
anyway, yeah, Yeah, well, it's not. I'm not a heavy drinker, but in the middle of a hot summer afternoon or evening, whatever it was, it would have been nice to have a gin and tonic or beer. Anyway, those are my couple of memories of coming to this house and settling in Reno, and of course I went to work right away. And
did you pick up when you came to be interviewed with the intention of being director of medical education at Marshall, knowing that this was also going to be split with the university?
Yeah, eventually,
school.
Sure.
Did you start picking up on, well, you had to have right away picked up on those who were opposed to the medical school?
Oh, absolutely.
Did that give you pause?
Well, it did, but I had interviewed carefully with a lot of people before I came, and I knew that. I mean, I'd interviewed with George Smith and Fred Anderson, who were the movement at the medical school, mm-hmm. and were very supportive, and at that time were getting along well with Ernie Mack and Carol Ogren. So the four of them said, you know, you're
quite a powerhouse.
It was. And Ken McLean was supportive at the time. And so, the important physicians, administrators, Fred was a regent and Ernie Mack was chairman of the board, they said, you know, there will be those who are opposed. And I understood that. I wasn't naive about that. As a matter of fact, I recall I went to Albany Medical College, and Albany started in around, I think, 1850. I looked it up when we talked earlier. And even to this day, 150 years later, they and every other school I'm aware of writes in their alumni journals or their other kinds of things about the town gown situation. Town gown arguments have gone on in American medicine, well, certainly for 150 years. Of those who are in practice and feel that somehow they are either ignored or discriminated against or get unfair competition from those who work for a medical school. So I was aware of that, but I chose, I think, consciously, I would listen at the, you know, around the table at lunch or coffee, you know, people, physicians who were opposed to the medical school would sort of ventilate about that, but I sort of just let it go in one ear and out the other, and I intentionally spent time with those who I knew supported education. At the time of the interview, Bob Barnett, Bob Miles, Dave Roberts, Bill Tappan, Jack Sargent, Bill O'Brien, I could probably name some more in a minute. They were all very supportive of the medical school, and they made up the search committee in the beginning for the director of medical education. Many of them were also on the State Medical Association's education committee. Bill O'Brien was the chair of that, and they were all very supportive of the school, and it didn't surprise me. Also, remember when I came and what was going on was a two-year school, and two-year schools traditionally were not as threatening to the practicing physician because, first of all the students would transfer after 2 years elsewhere. You didn't have to have a large physician faculty. What you had to have was a PhD basic science faculty. So there wasn't that level of competition. And also,
the students wouldn't be out in the community. Either.
Very little, just into people's office.
Things, yeah.
And there were no residencies involved, and physicians knew that where you had a four-year school giving degrees and residents, that there you had to have full-time faculty and then the competition being. So, in effect, even those who probably down deep were opposed to the school, they weren't that upset about the two-year school, simply stay out of my way, I don't want students near me, don't let them near my patients, you know.
But they had to have known that two-year school was a short-lived.
Eventually, yes. Of course, they would, if they were very busy in their own practice and not paying attention to what was going on in the literature, they could have been ignorant of that. But you're right, within a few years, as you know, the conversion process started because clearly it was an issue of convert to a four-year school or get out of the business. But at the time, in 69, that was not such a big issue, and many of them
would be downplayed with those who were sort of not paying attention.
But I made a conscious effort with the support of my boss and the physicians who supported medical education. I didn't ignore anyone. I wrote letters and I've got copies, I'm sure. I wrote letters to practically every doctor in town. At that time, we weren't too involved in Vegas. We became involved later, a couple of years later. I wrote to everyone in town saying, we'd be happy to have you help teach physical diagnosis. Would you like to have students come into your office to observe, etc.? Because the very first summer, as you see in 1971, the very first summer, we put students out in preceptor programs, and I took advantage of my friendships and knowledge of Las Vegas to go down there, and that first summer, the summer of 71, excuse me, sorry, summer of 72, we started, took our first students in August of 71. So the next summer, July of 72, we put freshman medical students for a one-month preceptorship in offices in Reno, Las Vegas, and in Elko, and Ely, and Carson. And I got a lot of my friends in Vegas to take students in with them. Ted Jacobs did, and Tommy Armour did, and Bill Harris, a number of people did, as they did here in Reno. And so that preceptorship program became very, very popular. The students liked it. It was their first sort of taste after 1 year of anatomy and physiology. It was their first taste of seeing patients and seeing what doctors do and putting on a white coat. We had given them a little introduction to physical diagnosis, that is, histories and physicals, so that when they went into a doctor's office, they wouldn't feel like they were all thumbs. They could at least stick the stethoscope in their ear the right direction and put it on the chest. So the preceptorship program that first summer capitalized on those physicians who wanted to be involved in medical education and who cared about it, and it turned out to be very successful. But back to your original question, I simply invited everybody, anyone who wanted to participate. We involved them, those who didn't. We simply ignored from that point on and made no more effort to cajole them, because we had enough. We had more than enough physicians in Reno and in Las Vegas those first couple of summers and the first couple of years, not only to take students into their office in a summer preceptorship program, but also to teach physical diagnosis on Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon. We'd take them over to Washoe and teach them how to, you know, examine patients and that sort of thing. So, and with only 32 students, it really was not. We didn't need a large volume of people.
The medical community had to be impressed with those first students.
Yes, I think they were.
I think there was an awful lot of effort put in on a one-to-one basis with these students, because it was such a small school.
I think everybody
was working overtime.
I think they were, but some
make
of
it work.
Some of the opponents, as you remember, and I'll remind you of the story, some of the opponents said that these students will never amount to anything.
Uh-huh.
They will never get transferred. They'll never pass national boards. And as you know, one physician did make a bet to George. I wasn't there in the room, and so I can't tell you exactly what was said. But hearing it from George, the bet was that none of these students would ever get transferred or any of them ever end up with a degree. Well, that long since is history, and I don't think George ever collected on the bet, but our students got transferred, and we transferred several hundred those first 5 years, and then, of course, when we converted to a four-year school in 1978-79, that period, since then, 95% of our students, I guess, or more, have graduated and gone on. So there was some of that kind of opposition. Now, later on, I'm getting ahead of my story, but when we went through the conversion in 1977 and 76 and 77, then there was a lot of opposition from physicians, and it became expressed, and they opposed it in the legislature. But we were far enough along in our success as a two-year school. We had already transferred five classes, and we had already proven our critics wrong, that the students would do well and they would pass and they would transfer, etc. And even a few had finished and gotten their degrees and come back to Nevada. It was clear that the legislature and the Board of Regents saw the school as viable. So their objections then, although they were difficult and I had to answer them and I frequently got into fights with verbal arguments with physicians. By then, the conversion was far enough along that they really couldn't reverse it. Although, as you know, in 1979, when I was the dean and we had a fateful meeting at Washoe Medical Center talking about starting residents there, there was a number of physicians, including the chief of staff, who were vehemently opposed and sent around to the doctors in the state questionnaire about whether the school should be closed and whether the whole thing should be reversed. Well, the legislature had already spoken, and obviously the legislature didn't change its mind, but it was a very difficult period of time for me personally and emotionally, as well as professionally as the dean. And Andy, I think, writes about this somewhat. I haven't read the thing, but writes about it in the book on Carol Ogren, because that was the big conflict of physicians now fearing that full-time faculty who had been hired would be in there telling them how to practice medicine and all of that. So that's a longer story we can talk about later. But anyway, at the outset, no, we were fine, and the two-year school went well, and I got very involved with it as chairman of the curriculum committee later as an associate dean and that sort of thing. So that's long answer to that question. 78, 79.
Okay.
And it's sequential here. That's where.
Sorry, for the purpose of this tape, I had stopped the tape to ask a question. We will be getting back, as a reminder, to the discussion on the Washoe Medical Center fight. Later on. We'll just go on with what we're discussing now.
Alrighty.
And make a note to come back to that.
Alrighty.
Okay. I had one question. Getting back into this list that we made, this chronological list, which is a great help. At one point here, you became involved with the American Cancer Society. I don't remember if we talked about that early on. What did you do that? Was that?
I was just a member of their board, and I think I got into that from Dave Roberts asked me to do it. But since I was,
they were keeping statistics.
Yeah,
for
they
a
were.
Long time. I remember when I was in medical records at St. Mary's back in the '60s,
yeah.
late '60s. We were keeping all kinds of records on the cancer.
Yeah, and remember, the regional medical programs, a lot of them had to do with heart, cancer, and stroke. Those were the three killers, so-called. Uh-huh. And so my involvement in the regional medical program, I didn't do a lot. I was just a member of one of the committees and the board of directors, and I only put that down as one of my first involvements in community and public service.
Uh-huh. Did you join any community?
I certainly
groups?
I joined.
Rotary, Lions,
no, I never did any of that.
You
no.
never did any of those.
No, I never. Even as a dean, you know, Bob Daugherty has and has been very involved in others. I guess I never really had an interest. First of all, secondly, I was busy enough that I wasn't looking for luncheons to go to,
uh-huh.
and I felt that my community service would best be done through medical groups of one kind or another. So I was active in the American Academy of Pediatrics. I helped out in fundraisers, you know, for the Cancer Society. I did do a study for the Washoe County School Board on school health, which wasn't accepted because I think from the viewpoint of the rather conservative Board of Education, the recommendation of the committee that I chaired, and I wrote the report with Jerry Matheson, who was a professor of public health, I guess, at the medical school, I think was probably just too liberal for them. We were calling for much more involvement of school nurses and more involvement in immunization programs and a variety of things that at that time you hardly ever talked about pregnancy prevention, although there obviously they had a siesis program for pregnant teenagers. But there were a lot of things that we suggested that now are being done, but in 1975, or a number of years before they're ahead of their time. So I did get involved in a number of public service kinds of things, which were encouraged by Carol Ogren and by George Smith when I went full-time to the medical school, and encouraged actually by the Board of Regents, because as you know, your experience in the medical school or in the university, when you're full-time, you have not only a duty to teach and to do research, but you also have a duty to do public service, and your promotion and tenure, of course, is dependent upon research, teaching, and service, as well as patient care. So
CME too.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this is probably why I see this. My husband is involved in a lot of service organizations, always has been,
right,
in Reno, and I see the list of members. I see very few doctors.
You're
on
right.
These things.
Yeah.
And I can understand why now.
Yeah. I think
because of the CME and the other medical groups that you belong to, that's quite enough. Not to mention all the meetings you have to go to become members of the staff and stay on the staffs of the various hospitals.
Yeah, and I think that physicians, now there are physicians that belong to Rotary and all these other things, but I think
not so many.
No, you're right, a handful,
yeah,
but I think these public service organizations do provide the businessman and others, professionals in the community, an opportunity to serve. But physicians don't need to look for that kind of thing. I mean, if they get involved in their own medical societies and various groups like Cancer, Heart Association, etc., there's plenty of opportunity for community service there. So I found much of it there, and of course I had plenty of opportunity to do community service and public service later on. Now, once I got on the Board of Medical Examiners in 1977, that essentially was my major community service for the next 20 years, if
sure.
you will. That was a very time-consuming job. And also, there was always the inherent possible conflict of interest between being on the Board of Medical Examiners, which licenses and disciplines physicians, and then being too involved in medical groups working with physicians who you might have to discipline in another setting. So members of the board, I think, including Ken McLean and Ted Jacobs and others, generally didn't get too involved. They were members of medical societies and that sort of thing, but tended to stay a little bit at arm's length. And I must say, many physicians kept me at arm's length, which was all right, I wasn't offended by it, but kept me at arm's length, particularly when I became secretary of the board, because they knew I was in a position to know a great deal about all physicians and also the ones about whom we'd received complaints. And I just always felt it's better to stay a little bit at arm's length from your colleagues if you're ever going to be in a position to have to discipline them or even investigate them. So that then changed a lot of my public service to internal to the university. So I got out of many of the medical kinds of programs, medical society kinds of programs, although I maintained membership till I retired.
Okay, so let's get on with some of these other comments that you have under your miscellaneous stories. Should we talk about the Washoe Medical Center?
Sure,
we at that point now?
Yeah, sure. I think just to set the stage, the conversion had already taken place. The legislature approved that in the spring of 1977. One part of that I think I'm not sure I mentioned, which was kind of interesting, was at the time that was being discussed in the legislature, Don Mello was the head of the Ways and Means Committee, and of course it was essential that the Ways and Means Committee in the Assembly and the Senate Finance Committee, which was that time controlled by Floyd Lamb in Las Vegas, they had to approve everything that went through them before it ever got to the general legislature, and they had to review the money. So because of the complexities of conversion and the money involved and the cost involved and the objections I talked about earlier of many physicians, Don Mello decided to call a committee of the whole, one of the few times that I'm even aware that that ever happened. There's a provision whereby the chairman of an important committee in the legislature can ask the entire assembly, or for that matter the Senate, in this case the assembly, the entire assembly to convene. So I recall it very well because we went down, it was about an hour and a half set apart late in the morning, like from 10 to 12, I've forgotten. And since I had written the conversion proposal, George got up, as did, I guess it was George got up and made a few general comments and then said, Dr. Scully will now present the proposal. So the entire assembly was there in their place, and we handed them out a copy of that blue book, which had the proposal in it, and handed them out pages of stuff. And I had to present the proposal before the entire legislature and then answer questions about it. And there were some fairly hostile questions about the cost and et cetera. So that was probably the most, I would say, most difficult public presentation I ever made. I wasn't the dean at the time, I was the associate dean. George was still here. But it was the most difficult one and challenging, but it went through for rather well. And afterwards, Michael Callahan and others told George that that had been very an important presentation. It apparently influenced enough votes so that subsequently the conversion proposal was approved. And as we talked earlier, that summer, shortly after George, after the approval went through, George called me in late in the summer of 77. We had already started our recruitment, sent out our, we had made up our job descriptions, and we were going to recruit a chairman of medicine and surgery and pediatrics, etc. George then told me he was going to resign, and the rest of that story I've told you. I was eventually appointed the dean that fall. But anyway, I had already recruited Ernie, or was in the process of recruiting, and over the next 6 months, Ernie Mazzaferri and Bert Dudding and Ira Pauley and Bob Martin and Bob Fulton and others were recruited to come and get started so that we could begin the first juniors in the summer of 1978. Well, we did that. Well, the next, I'll have to look up the date, but within the next 6 months, there was a meeting at Washoe Medical Center called by the Board of Trustees, at which I was invited to come based upon my request that the medical school become involved in the running of the clinic and that we put full-time faculty and residents in medicine specifically and also in pediatrics later, put them in the clinic to take care of the patients. And I had worked a lot with Carol, who I thought was supportive. I now realize that he was forgetful and didn't remember what he committed himself to. And but when challenged by the board of directors of Washoe, he backed down. But the proposal was well thought out and essentially said that the monies that the county now gives to pay physicians to run the county clinic would be given to the medical school. The medical school would hire the clinic physicians instead of Washoe Medical Center, and in addition we would put students and residents there and the indigent patients who were eligible for county care in Washoe Medical Center's public clinic would be handled by the medical school. Well, as you remember, that was an enormous uproar. Just as we said, quote, the medical school is trying to take over Washoe Medical Center and, you know, analogies to letting the camel put his nose under the tent. Pretty soon he'll be in the tent. And
the tail wagging the dog.
Yeah, all of that, every one of those. And it turned out to be a rather raucous, as I recall, evening event at the Mack Auditorium in Washoe Medical Center. Ernie was no longer on the board of trustees, I think. Forgotten who the chairman was at the time, but many of the members of the board of trustees were opposed to the medical school, and several of the physicians on the board representing the medical staff were opposed, and so they spoke vehemently against. And I recall one of the physicians saying, and I get the exact quote out of the paper, something to the effect that, well, Dr. Scully, if after this proposal, if it were to go through, and it could be shown that it cost the county and the hospital more money than they have, would the medical school and the university reimburse the hospital and the county for the deficit? And I didn't answer the question directly. I said, I can't speak for the university, but I would ask if after a trial period it can be shown that the medical school saved the county money, would the county and the hospital give that difference to the medical school? And of course, as you can imagine, there were those who clapped and supported my statement and others who clapped and supported the question from the member of the board, and it was left moot. They went into the board of, because I thought we had enough evidence that we could actually save the county money and do a better job, frankly. And